Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice of Brian Brown, the creator of the Brown Briefly, which still carries his moniker, although he departed this Vale of Tears over 2 years ago. We try to preserve Brian's roundtable format of adhering to his concept that less is more, more or less. Today, we have, and I'm not sure who we have, because I have a Voice of Vachon logo up, but we have myself, Bruce Holman, and Kevin Jones, and I think behind that Voice of Vachon logo, we have Truman O'Brien and Gail Kellner, possibly, and Lynn Kerrigan.
Well, so let's ask.
You were close. You were close. Yeah, actually, you've got Truman and Lynn. Gail is going to be late, we think. And somebody unplugged our camera is what the issue is. And I did not notice that until we were just about to go on the air. So I'm going to scramble around here and see if I can figure out how to plug the thing back in. But you guys talk among yourselves.
Oh, we will.
Truman, the advantage... The advantage with no camera, you don't need pants. I mean,
hey, wait just a minute.
I was going to say, Lynn might have something to say about that.
Oh, well. And remember, this is live radio. So
Indeed. You
get what you get.
That's right. If we go completely dark, then you can wander.
That's right.
Okay. All right. So welcome. Let me introduce each of you a little bit and tell us what's going on in this world. And Truman, I'll leave you to last.
Good, because he's up and under the desk already.
So let me introduce Lynn Kerrigan, who came to us out of the land of magnolias onto this island of Madronas. She's an analytic academic, social worker, poet, backup singer, and former all-star shortstop for the Dixie Debutantes. Lynn, what's happening in your world this week?
Hey, good morning. Well, for one, I noticed there's magnolias in bloom all over Vachon right now, so I feel very at home. And I also noticed that our neighborhood in Ellisport is starting to meet again, and we're working on the Ellisport History Trail, which will be really interesting. We may talk more about it in just a bit, but we've all gotten notice that they want the neighbors to get together and catch up on where we were 2 years ago when the committee had to go into hiatus because of COVID. And that will be very fun. We're getting to have very famous upscale neighborhoods now instead of the farm atmosphere when I moved here.
It will be exciting, and it'll be exciting to get the neighborhood back together again.
Yes, it will.
Been difficult to gather during the last 2 years. Finally, hopefully, unless this next surge sort of gets us, we'll be able to do more out and about kind of things. So also let me introduce our rocket scientist who's been reflecting mm-hmm. on his years of working with Boeing from his perch on top of the island above Burton, is the Phantom. I'm not sure you're quite a phantom anymore, but the editor of Indivisible Vachon weekly online newsletter for your consideration, Kevin Jones. Kevin, what's happening with you?
Hey, good morning, Bruce. You know, it's sometimes being keeping a low profile has its benefits.
Whack-a-mole syndrome, right?
It is, absolutely. Hey, but I will have to tell, I want to share this little story, and it involves Truman O'Brien. So I was in the neighborhood, you know, enjoying a nice day the other day, and I came across a neighbor. He was talking about how he was closing his business and kind of shutting down his offices. And Truman, anytime you know who this person is, just jump in. And he mentioned your name, and that you had suggested that, you know, given the fact that he's going to have more available time now, that he might actually want to create a show on the Voice of Vashon. Do you know who this is yet?
I do indeed.
Awesome. So what I say is that there's a contest that we have, and the contest is how many people you can ask on Vashon or Maury Island if they know Truman O'Brien. And you, as soon as you get a no, I don't know Truman O'Brien, you score a point. And my guess is you're not going to get too many points.
Well, because, I don't know if I'm famous or infamous. You know, there's that slight distinction there.
Yes, I understand.
But as long as they spell your name right, that's all.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Truman is our own local Kevin Bacon. Everybody is within at least one degree of Truman O'Brien.
Absolutely. And so, of course, we are talking about our friend Truman, Dr. Lauren Chin.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's get physical. So, yeah, it's a pleasure to talk to Lauren, and we don't talk often enough. But, it's just an encounter on Vashon, and your name came up, and I thought, you know, our listeners would want to hear about it.
Yeah, well, that's great. Hey, listen, I got to put in a quick plug here for Lauren's show. Dr. Chin had 46 years, I think he said, as a chiropractor. And he is a guy that's very much holistic medicine. I mean, he looks at the whole person. The guy is just brilliant. And the show, Let's Get Physical, his receptionist came up with that name, which I think is terrific. And I have learned so much listening to him. I engineer for him, of course. But go on to voiceofvashon.org, go to the shows tab, and find Let's Get Physical. It is fantastic. I highly recommend it. So there you go.
Mm-hmm. Brilliance in all corners. All right. Okay, Bruce. So I hijacked your agenda. Over back to you. Oh, you're muted at the moment. Yep.
I have grandkids here. Another story we'll get to in a minute. But that's a great intro, great segue into introducing our master of the virtual mix, Zoom modulating sound engineer, treetop skimming pilot, Vashon rancher out of West Texas and Montana, Truman O'Brien. So, Truman, what's the one degree of separation for you this week?
Well, I look in the mirror every morning, and you know, there he is, right there. Poor guy, you know. I mean, what can I say?
No, it's like the rest of us, we check the obituary page.
That's right. Make sure we're not exactly. Make sure we're not in it. No, you know, I'll tell you, here at Voice of Vashon, we've been chasing this darn problem. We're having a problem that our signal gets clipped. And we'll lose like 4 or 5 seconds. You know, we'll be talking away and beep, silence for like 4 or 5 seconds, or in the music or whatever. And we've just been pulling our hair trying to find it. And we've decided, well, what we're going to do, we're going to move everything down to Sunrise Ridge Studio, do all of our live stuff from here. And then we'll just use the Gene Bosch Studio as our recording studio, which is what we normally have here. And to see if we get these clippings happening here. And so far, it looks like we're not. So it looks like it may be our connection between the two studios that's the issue. However, you know, we just installed a bunch of new microwave antennas and radios, and our signal is really strong between the two. So it's got to be something in our network that's amiss. But anyway, we're getting there, and we're figuring it out. We've got some brilliant, brilliant people working on it, so.
Oh, great. So hopefully it'll all get worked out.
Oh, yeah. We should be back at JBBS on next Tuesday.
Oh, great. Great. So, and I'm Bruce Hallman. I'm living in Ellisport these days with an 8-year-old and a 4-year-old full time for the last 2 weeks. So I've not had a good night's sleep for 2 weeks while our daughter-in-law and son have been in the hospital for 2 weeks, delivering a baby. They got delivered this weekend. Babies, everything's fine. Baby's in intensive care because his lungs need some help at this point. But I think today the parents are coming home, and Ryan, my son, will be commuting into Seattle every day with mother's milk to keep the baby fed. And then hopefully within a day or two, the baby will be able to come home. So, but Pam and I have been living with a 4-year-old and an 8-year-old. 4-year-old is sleeping in our bed. So all night long, we get punched in the back and slapped in the face and get pushed to the edge of the bed. All those kind of things that happen when you sleep with a 4-year-old. But it's been a joy.
I have a very short story. We were in Texas visiting, and Molly was about 3, I think, at the time. And my parents said, were sleeping in my aunt's big king-size bed. And they said, oh, let Molly come sleep with us. And I got up in the morning, and my father, who was kind of a big guy, was curled up on this little tiny stool that was at the end of the bed. And I said, Dad, what are you doing here? He said, well, I did pretty good with her, but when she leaped up in the air and swapped ends, he said, I had to quit her. she had been kicking him all night long, and poor guy was out there sleeping on that bench. Oh, but I laughed for a half a day, you know.
Oh, definitely. Yep. Yeah, you forget when it's been a while, you forget.
Yeah. What it's like.
Well, you should be in line for some good 8-year-old jokes, too.
That's right.
In my opinion, they are the worst joke collectors and tellers of any age.
Right. Yep. Lots and lots of those. And of course, this week is spring break week for Vashon and most of the schools in Western Washington. So they when we could ship them off to school part of the day, the 4-year-olds in preschool half a day on Wednesday through Friday, but the 8-year-old is in second grade, so gives you a little bit of a break in the middle of the day. But but it's sort of a good reminder of what used to be.
Yeah.
So today is April 12th, and it's very interestingly, it's grilled cheese sandwich day. So all of you who want to celebrate grilled cheese sandwich day, have a grilled cheese sandwich. It's also licorice day.
Ooh.
And I was amazed, it's National Big Wind Day. And I was thinking, is that a breaking wind day? of course it's not. It's actually the day that the highest natural wind gust ever recorded in the world, 231 miles an hour, was recorded at Mount Washington in Vermont. So, so it's called National Big Wind Day, having nothing to do with the other kind of wind. So.
I figured you'd already been influenced by your grandson.
Yeah, right. That's what happens when you live with an 8-year-old.
Right.
Right? Yeah. You get all the bodily function jokes.
That's right.
Yes.
And all the potty jokes.
Yeah.
Kevin.
Well, hey, you know, you mentioned Licorice Day, and, you and I are boaters, and, of course, a lot of folks on Vashon are. And even if you're not a boater, you can go to Paul's Bow, beautiful seaside Liberty Bay city. And if you go to the little market in Paul's Bow, they have a licorice shrine at the Paul's Bow market. And if you've never been to a licorice shrine, you deserve the treat to go. It's just a short drive or a short boat ride away. Go check it out. It would be a beautiful day to do it today, Licorice Day. Why not?
All right. I'll bite. What is a licorice shrine?
You know, the little market in Paul's Bow looks very innocent from the outside. It looks kind of like a standard convenience store. You're going to walk in and, you know, find canned spam and what have you. This market is amazing. They import things from all over the world. The beer collection is, I don't know where you'd find one that rivals it. The licorice shrine is not large. It could fit in anybody's home, but it has licorices from all around the world. And almost every category, they have lots and lots of products from anywhere you might consider going. And so it's really a phenomenal place to have a chance to visit. For the licorice lovers, which I am truly one, the licorice shrine is a must-stop place.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you. Everybody needs to put that on their must-do bucket list, right? Visit the licorice shrine in Paul's Bow. But it is an amazing little market.
Yes, it is.
So let's talk about this sort of coming COVID surge that seems to be striking the East Coast at this point and moving slowly westward. Are we going to continue to mask? Are the Briefleys going to continue to mask, unmask? How are we going to approach the this coming surge?
Well, I'm curious. Have you folks had your second booster, or are you going for it?
I had mine last Friday.
Okay, I'm scheduled.
Yeah, I am too on Monday. But how about you, Lynn?
I need to get scheduled. I've had a lot going on and haven't had the 30 seconds it takes to go on VashonPharmacy.com and register online, but I will.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. You know, I'm torn. I don't know about you guys, but I know that King County is starting to get a pretty good surge of this BA2 or whatever it is, the new Omicron variant. And we're starting to get a little bit of a surge here on the island as well. But because we are so thoroughly vaccinated here on the island, I'm kind of pretty relaxed about it. I don't know. How about you guys?
You know, the thing that I don't know, and maybe there's enough data now, that those who are vaccinated and boosted and get COVID, right, it's almost inevitable. You can say, sooner than later, right, get it over with. But what I don't know for sure is the extent to which, while the symptoms are lesser, if you're still likely to suffer from long COVID and some of the durable effects of the, you know, the lung capacity and the reduced aerobic capacity. And as a bicyclist and a hiker and a climber, you know, I kind of think my lungs are really important to keep in as good a condition as I can, particularly as I'm getting older. And so that's my worry. And I'm going to continue to be pretty protective of them.
Yeah, Lynn.
And for me, I think we knew this was going to happen. Every time that we've loosened restrictions, you know, we've had a big surge. And to me, it seems like it's the compromise we've made so that we can keep the economy going and keep people working and keep, you know, as much routine as we can in schools and things like that. And we have hoped that our vaccines and our boosters would allow us to treat COVID like the flu. But Bruce, you know, and Kevin, as you're saying, you know, there are definitely some long-term consequences of COVID that we haven't seen with the flu. So it's a uneasy compromise we've made, and we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, that's what, you know, I tend to mask up when I go in places where there's lots of people, you know. When I'm outside, when I'm, you know, having coffee in a place where there's not many people or outside having coffee, I'm not as worried about wearing a mask. And also, you know, like both Kevin and Lynn say, I'm not too worried about it for myself. You know, the mask is really for everybody else, if you will. But also, you know, I have concerns about long haul COVID. I think we all do. We're all at a certain age, and you know, and as COVID becomes more endemic and less pandemic, it's still going to be an issue, I think. And on Vashon, you know, 94-95% of the people are vaccinated that are over 5 years old. And so, you know, I'm not particularly worried, but I think it's good to be safe. Truman, what are you doing?
Well, I'm thinking that we don't have, you know, the older we get, the less this long haul is going to affect us, because
the long haul
the
is
less
shorter.
Long, the
exactly,
long is.
The long haul is a little shorter, you know. So, you know, that, not to be facetious, but you know, truly.
I think there's another issue that we're seeing happening, which is we learned so much about essential workers, people who have to show up to work. They can't isolate. They're doing frontline public service jobs to keep our buses going and services going. And I think that if labor continues to take the brunt of COVID, you know, we're already seeing labor asked to start unionizing, and you know, they don't want to come back into jobs that they don't feel are worth their time. And so I think we still have a lot of labor issues to think through and figure out how do we keep everyone safe, because I think, you know, the gamble of starting the economy back up is going to be felt by some of us more than others.
And it's sort of, to me, it's sort of one of those aspects of pandemics, which when you look historically at pandemics, they always involve some kind of readjustment of relationship between labor and wealth, whether it's peasants and aristocracy, or whether it's factory workers and factory owners, or a kind of service economy we're in today. And I think what we're seeing is labor has a much more powerful voice. Workers have a much more powerful voice, whether it will come through organized labor in terms of unions, or whether it will come in terms of individual actions by people who work, particularly in jobs that are exposed to the public. You're seeing a fundamental readjustment of the relationship between what it means to be working and what's a livable working wage, and what businesses and corporations can expect from people they employ. And it's not going to be an easy transition, but it's going to be a transition. Kevin?
Yeah, I'm really, the way you frame that, Bruce, I'm really curious what, I mean, we've heard a lot of things that are driving that change. For example, people don't want to go and get exposed to COVID. Businesses have made it more convenient for people to work from home, right? We also hear that a lot of people are leaving their jobs because there's opportunity for upward mobility, right? Because there's some vacancies that they can move up to fill. I wonder if there's also people who have experienced the COVID lifestyle, which is a lower demand and more, you know, less stress in some dimensions, right? In terms of you don't have to get on that ferry boat. You don't have to go across the West Seattle Bridge. Oh, oops, sorry, we don't have that right now. You know, all those things, you know, are kind of removed from your life and replaced with other things. So I wonder if people are liking, you know, a simpler lifestyle is actually going to be good for me. And work maybe doesn't place such a high priority now because I can go to simplification. I don't know if anybody's studying that, but I'm really curious what the historians will write about this period and what those influences are.
Yeah. No, I think you're right on. I think that's the recalculation that's taking place among people who work at service jobs and lower paying jobs. And they're sort of just, they're running that calculus. And right now, you know, because of a whole variety of reasons, people can make those choices. And I think they're going to continue to make the choices. And it's sort of the, you know, the graying of the American economy. You know, the baby boom bubble is reaching into their 60s and 70s at this point. And many are continuing to work, but many are stepping back and working in different ways. And it really is a fundamental reassessment of what work is and who wants to work and how they want to work. And that's sort of the revolutionary part of pandemics that you don't really see until you get a few years away and can look back. But as a historian looking at it, looking at past pandemics, I see the pattern emerging real quick, real clearly. We're not going to be what we were before in terms of the economy, and particularly in terms of people working in the economy. Yeah, Lynn?
The thing that I see as well, and I appreciate your opening the door to the thought of patterns, you know, what are we seeing as a result of this? One of the things I am watching pretty closely is the affordable housing crisis and the rise of homelessness during the pandemic. I think that we have got to come to grips with the fact that, especially in Seattle, with a very, very high average income rate because of all of the tech society workers and our, you know, big four employers here, what we're not, you know, taking into account is that not everybody makes those kind of wages and not everybody can afford, you know, rents that are as high as mortgages and mortgages that are just going out of sight. So there again, I think is a big challenge for us to watch and kind of think, where the tentacles of COVID have taken us and, you know, what we can do to support people who can't afford, you know, the kind of housing that is on the kind of market principles of, you know, supply and demand. It's got to be something different than that.
And, you know, from my perspective, I mean, that's, we're in a time period similar in some ways to what happened in the late 19th century as agricultural America sort of collapsed and industrial America emerged and people fled the farms in vast numbers to move to the cities because that's where the jobs were. And in this economy, we're seeing sort of the opposite. People are fleeing the cities. People are moving to places like Vashon or to Issaquah or beyond, you know, Fall City, wherever, moving to Eastern Washington, moving to Montana, moving to places where there is affordable housing and where they can still work, particularly, as Kevin pointed out, when you can work remotely, you don't need to live in downtown Seattle anymore. You can live in Montana and enjoy the lifestyle of Montana and still earn a relatively substantial income. So that's the equation that's taking place. Yeah, Truman.
I have friends who live in Prosser, you know, outside of Yakima, and they said that the land prices there have just skyrocketed because there are so many people are, like you said, fleeing the city because they found they can work remotely and they're surviving nicely. And so consequently, the land prices have just gone crazy. But I think you're seeing that everywhere, Montana in particular. Of course, Montana's always had that issue with the Californians coming up.
But again, the skyrocketing land prices there, you know, they're doubling from 50,000 to 100,000.
Oh, yeah.
Rather than from 500,000 to a million.
That's true.
I bet it's harder to be homeless there, too, with the, weather a lot colder than it is here in our temperate climate. So, you know, mostly port cities and really coastal cities have taken the brunt of the homelessness rise. And, you know, that's not going to be possible for them to flee inland where prices are not only higher, but there's no, smaller opportunity and the weather is terrible. So there's some natural limitations in that.
And it's the issue Vashon's confronting, I think, in terms of, and it's become increasingly so in the last couple of years under COVID and sort of the surge in housing prices we've seen in the last 2 years. Those folks who are working, you know, entry level, service level jobs on the island, there's no rentals available. People have turned their homes into Airbnbs or into summer homes or whatever. And bam, you know, where are the people who work on the island going to live on the island?
Port Orchard, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are we going to become a Martha's Vineyard West where everybody who works here lives someplace else and commutes to work on Vashon?
Yeah. And that's certainly a challenge in a couple ways. One is that, you know, if you look at where King County, for example, is investing revenues for upgrading homes for energy efficiency. They're investing in low-income communities, and that includes currently White Center and Skyway. And I think about on Vashon, you know, we have homes that were built as summer cabins. They're not well insulated. They tend to be leaky. They tend to be, you know, polluting, you know, basically carbon pollution from those homes. We have homes that were built years and years, decades ago have oil burning furnaces, which are, of course, another climate challenge. So while there's a lot of people on Vashon who love to see us address and improve the housing stock to reduce the climate impact that we're having, we also know that the governments and funding, there's places that are much more needy, if you will, than on Vashon. So Vashon has some unique challenges, I think, to go forward to the point at which we can take it, you know, become available for federal or state housing money and home improvement money, given the fact that we are fairly, well off compared to a lot of other communities.
Well, we're also very senior. And so while a lot of seniors have a lot of wealth in stocks or mutual funds or family money, I know that one of the things I think about, because I'm not in that category, I'm, carefully shepherding a savings from a life of public service, which has not been that big. But the thing that I've noticed Seattle trying that I'd like to try here would be some support for people either building tiny homes in their backyards or remodeling their own houses so that it can support a second family in there. So that we could do more to, it would increase density, but it would also be something that is possible to do with less money, I think, than new construction everywhere.
And there is an advantage. The state legislature passed a budget to address homelessness. The new budget has about $220 million of federal and state funds. It's $45 million for rental assistance, and about $650 million, a portion of that, $400 million for building affordable housing. So, our leaders are recognizing the challenge and hopefully directing some funds that will be helpful. And it's just not clear where exactly those funds are going to be spent. How much on Vashon is kind of a key question.
I'm curious, Kevin, though, how will that, will that be available as low interest loans, or will they just be grants, or do you know?
I don't know the details of how that is in the specific piece of legislation. We'd have to open up and see how that's done.
Right. Okay. Thanks.
Yeah.
I think that's an important question, Truman, because those funding access and supply issues, I think, are kind of a structural piece beneath what we see often on the surface. For example, whether that money is going to go to developers to do 10% of affordable housing in a larger, big development, well, they'll make plenty of profit, or whether it could be distributed to other people to either, be able to fund and support tiny houses on property. There's some zoning restrictions for that. Whether there's, I guess what I'm saying, maybe a more equitable distribution of those funds, because there used to be flop houses built for the homeless. When I started my social work career, those rooms were $2 a night, and somebody could pick that up begging on the street. And that can't happen now with our economy. And so, we may need to devolve a little bit, in the name of equity for people having a roof over their head, from the zoning and I don't know what I would consider them, standards they're using to spread that money around. Mm-hmm. That's, to me, the big challenge.
Mm-hmm. So, Kevin, we had a visit last week from our congressional representative, Jaipal. Were you involved with that? And what's your read on her visit to Vashon?
I was off hobnobbing in Squim, actually. so I was not able to attend Congresswoman Jayapal's visit. But I will say, if I have the floor for a moment, speaking of Squim, that our listeners need to stay on the Voice of Vashon, because at noon today, Real Talk, Susan McCabe is going to be talking with Karen Hogan of Squim. And Karen and her story, and others in Squim, who recognized their QAnon mayor was not reflecting their values, and how the community of Squim came together to reelect people on the city council that shared their values. And the QAnon mayor is no longer mayor, is still on the city council. But Karen's adventure in exploring her community, bringing people together to basically achieve this outcome, has been covered in Newsweek and The Daily Beast and MSNBC. And now Karen Hogan is going to be talking with Susan McCabe today at noon to share her story and her role in this evolution in Squim. So I do urge our listeners to take some time. It's all about democracy. It's all about coming together. It's all about community.
Susan's already here.
I was just going to say that. Yeah, Susan's in the studio right now and hearing your accolades, and she's smiling broadly. So I think this is good.
Kevin, that's an interesting sort of segue into this sense that what I'm hearing on the news from a number of Republican representatives and senators is this line about Zelensky and Ukraine being the thugs of the world rather than Putin being the thugs of the world. I mean, it's sort of buying into that QAnon view of the world, and sort of Putin is not the bad guy, but Zelensky is the bad guy. What's the lesson from Squim for the rest of us in terms of how we deal with that aspect of the Republican Party right now, who seems to be in bed with Putin and sort of, you know, the Joe McCarthy's of the world, the Republican Joe McCarthy's of the world must be turning over in their graves thinking, God, the Republican Party is now in bed with the commies from Russia.
Yes. You know, the art of projection is well and alive and achieving new milestones, I would say. You know, we now have a Supreme Court justice who is claiming that his counterparts are getting involved in legislative activities in too high a degree. And he shows up with a photograph with him and a Republican running for office in Georgia. Surprise, surprise. I think that the folks in Squim, because they just had a chance to meet with us last night as well, really understanding what's happening, being aware, don't put your democracy on autopilot, understand what's happening, realizing who in your community you can reach out to. How do you build bridges and not create walls, even when you have differences of opinion? And how do you have a shared awareness of a concern that would affect the broader portion of the community? I think that's what the folks in Squim would say about projection. And to make sure that we build our relationships, communicate our understanding of what's happening, and call it out when it's not something that is aligned with what we'd like to have.
Truman, I was wondering, you know, I mean, you have a number of friends that you grew up with and served in the military with who are on the more conservative end of the spectrum. I mean, how are they reading this sort of Zelensky, Ukraine, Putin kind of thing?
You know, it's really interesting. I have, it's being really silent on that end. I see several of these folks on Facebook, and they're kind of leaving it alone. I don't know if they're, you know, I don't know what their thoughts are. I've been wanting to query them, but I don't want to stir the hornet's nest either. You know what I mean? but I really would. I am curious to myself as to what their thoughts are. This morning, I did receive a text from one of my pals, and I was complaining about the price of diesel out here on the island. I filled up my wife's car, and it was $123, wow, you know, to fill it up, which is kind of, and my, one of my buddies said, vote Republican, you know, and I said, well, you know, yeah, I pretty much used to vote Republican until Donald Trump came along, and he kind of ruined it for me, but he said, oh, you can't blame Trump, and I said, well, no, but I can blame you for everything else, so.
Yeah, Lynn.
To me, Truman, what's important about what you're saying is that, you know, there's not everybody in the same box on any party. You know, we have several factions in the Democratic Party, and there's certainly those in the Republican Party who are trying to be more mindful of world affairs in the context of, you know, our history with communism and war aggressors as Putin is doing, and there is a segment of the fringe Republican Party, I'll call it, that is the party of Donald Trump, and that is doing nothing but churning out misinformation, no matter what the issue is, to turn people against the Democrats and against Joe Biden, and to try to get back in power no matter what. And those, to me, are very worrisome tactics, and I hope that people are really capable of listening deeply to what people are saying in this great debate and trying to find it, figure out what your values are about what you want from this country, whether we're going to retain a rule of law and truth and, you know, a court system that works to punish injustice at any level, or go down a path of what appears to me to be flat out fascism in terms of might making right and just at any cost going after your enemies.
You know, the one thing that
I sure hope Merrick Garland is listening, Lynn. Thank you for making those statements.
The one thing I think is that, you know, you look at Liz Cheney and what's the other fellow that's on the committee? And
Kinzinger.
These folks are kind of the old Republican Party. They're talking about smaller government, you know, more efficient, blah blah blah. But I think that most of the other Republican Party members are so afraid of Donald Trump's base and the amount of money that's available to them that they're afraid to take a stand against the guy because they don't want to lose that funding. You know, it just does not make sense to me at all that the money would drive their whole approach to governance. I mean, it's always been that way, I guess, but still, it just it's striking to me. I don't know.
I agree, and this is, if ever there was a time to stand on principle, it's now. Not on politics, not on personality, but on principle for what we want the country to be and how we make it so, because it's in danger right now.
Mm-hmm. And that's why the 2022 election, you know, coming up, it's still, 6 months away or so. It's going to be a real indicator, I think, of how the country's reacting to these sort of extreme positions that are being taken. Sort of on both sides, if you will, but particularly by the extreme right wing of the Republican Party, and whether or not those folks are going to win these primary elections, or whether the more moderate Republicans are going to win the primaries, or if the extremists win, the extreme right wins the Republican nomination, are they going to lose to a more moderate Democrat in a general election? That's really what will be the telling thing that comes up this November. And here we are in early April. So you got May, June, July, September, October, August, you know, you got 6-7 months. And that's going to tell us, I think, the future of American democracy. Kevin, what do you think?
I totally agree. You know, there's indivisible, there's a bunch of indivisible groups across the state. Half a dozen of them are now in our elections 2022 work group. If you go out to indivisiblevashon.org and at the top of the page, click on the Get Out the Vote link, you will find there are opportunities right now to influence the vote. There are people knocking on doors right across Cobles Passage in Gig Harbor and Bremerton to reelect Senator Emily Randall, who won by 104 votes. There's opportunities to influence election outcomes in key states like Nevada, Arizona, Pennsylvania. Now is a good time, if you care about those election outcomes, to check out that resource. And if you also want to join our Indivisible Vashon meeting, we're meeting next week, go to that same page, register for the meeting. We're going to talk about elections and what folks can do. So we can make a difference. Engaging in it now is a good start.
Good. Yeah, I was encouraged that I just read the other night about the result of the Arizona election sort of review. You know, out of 3.4 million votes, there were 9 illegal votes. And half of those were mistaken illegal votes. You know, people just made mistakes. You know, 3 of them were felons who voted, illegally, but they were sent ballots, you know. So it really gives the truth to the big lie of a stolen election. But whether that will make a difference or not will be interesting to see. So, Truman, I see we're coming up to the end of the hour. Anything to add?
I thought I would end on a lighter note.
Good.
Yes, I heard that Ketanji Brown Jackson was, her flight was going down to Florida after, and they heard this really strange noise, so they made an emergency landing, but they discovered it was just the right wing whining. Sorry, I had to throw that
can happen.
Yeah, sorry, but boom, you know, got a little drum roll.
Good way to end, Truman.
Yeah, okay.
Well, So for Kevin, Lynn, Truman, I'm Bruce Hallman. See you next week when the Briefleys will join me for another 45 minutes or 46 minutes of talk about Vashon, its environs, and the world beyond. So thank you, everybody.
See y'all next week.
And Gail will be hosting.